This episode of Dean Bakari's Meaningful Show is brought to you by Flashbooks, where you can get best-selling business and self-improvement book summaries that you can read or listen to in under 20 minutes. To learn more and get started for just a buck today, visit www.getflashnotes.com. Welcome to the Meaningful Show podcast, where every single week we work to bring you an inspiring insight, idea, or interview to help you live better, work better, and be better both in life and in business. Brought to you by MeaningfulHQ.com, we've got one very simple goal here on this show, and that is to help you do more of what matters and less of what doesn't. I'm your host, Dean Bakari, and if you're ready, then I'm ready. So let's get into it. Quick question for you. What do you usually do to make yourself feel good about yourself and the actions that you take on a daily basis? What do you usually do? How do you make yourself feel good about yourself? Some people make themselves feel good by setting big goals, creating game plans of priorities to help achieve those goals, and then sort of taking action and executing around those priorities on a day-to-day basis. Some other people have a lot of intelligence. They're super intelligent. They're super smart, big thinkers that want to achieve the biggest dreams they can possibly envision, but somehow end up becoming ultra-stressed rather than ultra successful. Now, how does that happen? They've got ideas on top of ideas. They've got dreams of doing big things. They've even got the confidence. They've got the intelligence to help them make it happen. But for some reason, when it's time to get down to the business of doing the work, they find themselves procrastinating. So what do they do to fix it? How do they fix this procrastination problem? Well, some people try to numb it down with booze instead of trying to figure out how to overcome the challenge. They just booze it away, right? They try to forget about all the things they've been procrastinating on doing by having a drink or two or 10. And of course, obviously, there's no harm in having a few drinks every now and then, but when one or two turns into 10 or more over and over and over again, then there's obviously something that people are trying to push down, that these people are trying to forget about, some kind of pain they're trying to cover up. Obviously, we all know that alcohol is a depressant, right? But have you ever thought about why some people call it liquid courage, quote unquote, right? Back in the college days, if you remember, get a little liquid courage in you, you'll be able to go and talk to that girl or gal and no problems, no fear. So here's what happens. Let's talk about that for a second. Liquid courage. Here's what happens when people get a little booze, a little bit of liquid courage into their system. First, there's an initial surge of energy, right? The liquid courage, which allows them to forget about their problems and allows them to talk or behave in ways that they normally would not. But shortly thereafter, what happens? The energy drops. It drops dramatically, right? That's why we call it a depressant, because you go from this place of no inhibitions to feeling crappy, right? Feeling hungover. But where does that initial sort of spike of energy or courage come from? Where does it come from in the first place? Here's where it gets really interesting. Now, alcohol is actually depressing something. It's actually shutting down the negative self-talk and the uncomfortable visions that are going on in your head. Now, when this happens, when the negative voice in your head kind of shuts up and it's tamed, even if it's just for a little while, your energy skyrockets. It's almost kind of a no-brainer when you think about it, right? Of course, our energy is going to increase if we stop thinking about all the stuff that we've been procrastinating on, all the problems, all the issues, all the troubles that we've got preoccupying the bandwidth in our brains. And if we stop feeding our minds overwhelming images of not handling something successfully at work or at home earlier in the day by using alcohol to kind of cover it up and forget about it, then our energy goes up. But then when the booze wears off, what happens, right? We go back to where we were in the first place. And that's the big problem with numbing our negative thoughts with booze or anything else. The numbing is temporary. The problems don't disappear. The stuff we need to do doesn't go away. And when we wake up the next morning, we still end up procrastinating on what's most important. Except this time, we do it with a hangover. Now, by the way, I'm not saying that booze is bad or anything like that. I'm just giving you an example here. Now, again, back to the example. And by the way, the numbing of the pain, the anxiety, the nerves can't be done selectively, right? We can't just numb one part of our minds and not the other. When we numb ourselves down for long enough And often enough, it can get really ugly. Like, we risk numbing our source of inspiration, our purpose, our enthusiasm, the drive that excites us to live on a daily basis, right? That zest of life, the things that we love to do, the passions that we have. And that's not going to help us stop procrastinating. It's just going to help us forget about life, right? The juice of life. It'll just make us resort to procrastinating even more than before. Again, side note here, I'm not saying drinking booze is bad, but obviously anything in excess isn't going to get you where you want to be in terms of optimizing your health and wellness. Another question for you. So why do the smartest people tend to be the ones that procrastinate the most? Why do the smartest people procrastinate the most? You consider yourself smart, right? Of course you do. I like to think of myself as pretty smart too. If you don't say so myself, know what I mean? In fact, sometimes it's the smartest, most creative and capable people that end up procrastinating the most. So naturally then, that leaves us wondering, if we're so smart, then why the heck do we allow ourselves to keep procrastinating on important stuff? Answer: our bodies respond on a visceral level to the images that we produce in our heads. In fact, your nervous system can't even really differentiate between what you vividly imagine and what you actually experience in reality. Your nervous system can't differentiate, can't tell the difference between what you vividly visualize in your mind and imagine as reality and what actually happens as reality. If you don't believe me, let me prove it to you real quick. So your body, it responds to the images that you feed it. So play along with me here on this little exercise. Imagine for a second, just for a second, that you're driving to the grocery store, the same one that you always go to. You pull into the parking lot, you park your car, you've got your grocery list ready to go. As you're walking into the grocery store, the first section you decide to head towards is the brightly lit fruits and veggies section, right? You immediately notice that you've got these big, giant citrus bins right in front of you filled with oranges and grapefruits and lemons and all those nice, bright, colorful fruits and vegetables. Now turn your attention to the pile of big, giant yellow lemons. Take a look at those. Look at that bin. For some odd reason, you notice there's a cutting board right next to this big bin of lemons, right? Along with a knife right next to it. Go ahead and grab the biggest, brightest, yellowest lemon that you can find from the pile and put it on the cutting board. Take the knife and slice through the lemon real quick. As you're slicing through the lemon, notice the juices from the lemon trickling down the sides, dripping down onto the cutting board. Notice the mist of zest kind of that comes up from the lemon. Smell the citrusy, lemony smell, right? Notice all those things. Go ahead and cut the lemon right in half, okay? And take that half that you cut in half and then slice that one in half too, okay? So now that should leave you with a quarter of a lemon, right? Now grab the quarter of the lemon off the cutting board and just pop it in your mouth. Pop it into your mouth and chomp down into it real quick. Zesty. So if you played along with me, right? You can come back to reality now. If you played along and you did that in envisioning and you visualized what I was describing for you with the lemon, take the lemon, you put it on the cutting board, you grab the knife, you slice through it, and you notice the little spritz of the juice from the lemon kind of coming out on the sides, dripping onto the thing. You smell the lemony scent, the citrusy scent, and all those little different sort of experiences are happening. And if you played along, you probably noticed that the saliva content in your mouth actually increased a little bit. You wanna know how that happened? Your body literally actually produced citric acid as a result of you vividly imagining yourself in the grocery store in front of those lemons, right? Cutting into the lemons. Same thing happens when somebody starts talking about one of your favorite foods, or you walk by, you know, one of your favorite restaurants, or you smell something randomly, your favorite food, and someone's cooking it as you're walking down the street or something, and you smell it and you get a whiff of it, you're like, damn, now I'm hungry, you know, or you smell it and you all of a sudden you start feeling water, the saliva content in your mouth starts watering, right? The same thing happens. And the thing is here, it all is a result of what's going on in your head. It was all in your head. It's all in your mind. You're visualizing those things and you're having a biological reaction in your body as a result of doing so. So let's take that and think about this idea for a moment. If our bodies respond to the images that we feed it, how can we expect to feel when we think about doing something like, say, our taxes, right? How do you feel when you think about doing your taxes, when you have to do your tax returns? When you think about how you have to do your taxes, do you tend to start visualizing positive images of success and completion and action? How about images of sort of getting it done, right? Cranking out, smiling while you're doing them, getting them taken care of? Probably not. Negative. Now, let's think about this for a second, okay? Wouldn't it make sense that the people who are the most creative, the people who are the most capable, intelligent, those that can sort of envision potential negative outcomes and consequences, those are the people that are more likely to procrastinate on something like, say, filing their tax returns? Because, why? Because these are the same folks that are sensitive enough to produce a vivid visualization of the worst case scenarios and negative outcomes that could come about as a result of doing their taxes, right? As a result of thinking about doing their taxes. They start freaking out, thinking about all the potential negative outcomes, consequences that could potentially happen even before they ever even happen. And so they start freaking out. Their bodies start going crazy. And they start saying, what if it isn't done properly? If it's going to take forever to collect all the receipts that I need to prove for some of the stuff that I'm writing off? What if I claim more than I should and get caught doing it? The forms look totally different this year. How do I do this? I got to read all this crap now. God, man, should I get a new accountant? What if they screw it up and I get audited? Oh no, tax fraud. Oh God, what if I'm jailed? And on and on and on, right? They think about all the crazy stuff that could happen before it ever even happens. And the bottom line here is this: procrastination is nothing but a feeling. In fact, oftentimes, it's the dum-dum who just does whatever's in front of him without considering the positive or negative consequences of doing so that ends up sort of being the one who beats procrastination. He doesn't have priority. He's got no long-term thought behind his action, right? So he just plods forward like a dum-dum. But smart people, though, like you and I, sometimes place themselves in this psychological jail cell, right? And that's what can so often cause us to procrastinate. So for instance, just a quick glance at your tax forms or whatever other daunting task you've got on your table can send your sort of sensitive but intelligent brain on a mental tangent of negative thought patterns that go so deep they can paralyze you from ever even taking the first step. Something to keep in mind here is this: nothing grows in ice. And far too often, folks allow their negative thoughts to freeze them from taking action and achieving success. So to melt the ice, what do we need to do? We need to decide to take action. We need to harness the power of decision and action. That's how we fix this procrastination problem. The secret is to stop procrastinating by intelligently dumbing down your brain. Now, in his book, Getting Things Done, David Allen discusses the power of, quote-unquote, intelligent dumbing down, right? By intelligently dumbing down your brain by figuring out the next action. It's one of the most powerful ideas in the book, right? All you do is just figure out the next action, the next physical action that you need to take about something, and then just do it. Just do it, right? Like Nike says. Now, it's no secret that procrastination causes lots of stress, lots of pressure. But the way in which we relieve this pressure is where the secret comes in. Here's what you need to know if you want to learn how to stop procrastinating for good. You need to harness the power of decision. If you want to stop procrastinating, you need to figure out the very next physical action, right, that you need to take to move something forward, be it a task, a project, a phone call, whatever else. You should also know that to stop procrastinating, the only thing you need to change is what you focus on. Want to learn how to stop procrastinating? Learn how to shift your focus. Shifting your focus to something that your mind perceives as doable, right, makes the difference, that literally makes the difference. Let me explain. Think about something that you've been procrastinating on, like finishing a presentation for work, for instance. Now, focus on how that makes you feel, right? Whenever you think about how you have to do that presentation, how you have to get started with it, even though you haven't done a single thing about it yet, and it's going to be due soon, you're going to have to make that presentation in front of your boss and all of your coworkers soon enough, like next week maybe, and you haven't even started on it, and you've had all quarter to do it, 3 months so far to do it, and you haven't even gotten started. Oh man, how does that make you feel? Does that make you feel good? No, makes you feel crappy, makes you feel terrible. Now, shift your focus to one simple thing that you can do right now, in this moment, to move this presentation even the tiniest bit closer to done. Maybe you need to Google some images to include in the presentation. That's doable, right? Make that your next action. Just do it. Write it down, put it on your list, do it, right? The rationale behind this next action method is simple. When you do something your mind perceives, again, as doable, your energy goes up. Your sense of direction and drive increase dramatically. You'll be able to motivate yourself to get whatever you need to get done, done. So anytime you feel the procrastination creeping back up again, you should just take it as a trigger. Take it as an action signal to chunk down whatever you feel like procrastinating on into something simple and doable. Even if it's something as small as opening Keynote up on your MacBook and naming your presentation, right? Just putting the title on there and saving the document. You know, one small step leads to another small step and another until all of a sudden you've got Big Mo on your side. You know who Big Mo is? Momentum. Once you've got momentum on your side, you can literally move mountains. Oh, and by the way, Big Mo doesn't pick sides. You pick sides. So momentum falls on whichever side you decide to focus on. Momentum just follows you wherever you go. Big Mo. So momentum will focus on whatever you focus on. So if you focus on procrastinating, momentum rolls in that direction. But if you focus on chunking something down into a next action, a simple, doable task you can take immediate action on, then the momentum rolls in that direction. And the more you focus on the positive chunking down and taking action, the more momentum you build up. And the more momentum you build up, the more next actions you take. And the more next actions you take, the more things you get done. And the more things you get done, the more you move towards taking your greatest dreams and turning them into reality. So, now, let's learn how to stop procrastinating by developing the next action habit. So here are some crucial quotes about harnessing the power of the next action habit to finally stop procrastinating that I pulled from David Allen's book, Getting Things Done. Quote, "You're either positively drawn toward completing the action or reluctant to think about what it is and resistant to getting involved in it. Often, it's simply the next action decision that makes the difference between the two extremes. Thinking and deciding require energy. And when you notice something unfinished in your world, but haven't determined what the next action is yet, you'll tend to be reminded of your fatigue and sense of being overwhelmed. Hence, most people's reaction to their own lists and organizers is negative, not because of the contents per se, but rather because sufficient appropriate thinking has yet to be applied to them. In following up with people who have begun to implement the GDT methodology," says Alan here, the author of Getting Things Done, he says that he's discovered that one of the subtle ways many of them fall off the wagon is in letting their action lists grow back into lists of tasks or sub-projects instead of discrete next actions. Now, they're still ahead of most people because they're actually writing things down, but they often find themselves stuck and procrastinating because they've allowed their action lists to harbor things like this: meeting with the banquet committee, Johnny's birthday, receptionist, slide presentation. In other words, things have morphed back into stuff instead of starting at the action level. That's the key, the action level. There are no clear actions here. And anyone keeping a list filled with items like this would send her brain into overload every time she looked at it. Is this extra work? Is figuring out the next action on your commitments additional effort that you don't need to expend? No, of course not. If you need to get your car tuned, for instance, you're going to have to figure out that next action at some point anyway. The problem is that most people wait to do it until the next action is, say, something like, call the auto club for tow truck. So when do you think most people really make a lot of their next action decisions about their stuff? When it shows up or when it blows up? And do you think there might be a difference in the quality of their lives if they handled this knowledge work on the front end instead of the back? Which do you think is the more efficient way to move through life? Deciding next actions on your projects as soon as they appear on your radar screen and then efficiently grouping them into categories of actions that you get done in certain contexts? Or avoiding thinking about what exactly needs to be done until it has to be done, and then spluttering through your actions as you try to catch up and put out the fires? Obviously, avoiding action decisions until the pressure of the last minute creates huge inefficiencies and unnecessary stress. That may sound exaggerated, but when I ask groups of people, he says, to estimate when most of the action decisions are made in their companies, with few exceptions, they say, when things blow up. End quote. Whew. So, you want to know what the number one source of stress in the workplace is, and the thing that people complain about most? It's this thing called crisis work, last-minute stuff that should have been decided on ahead of time. A huge portion of work-related stress comes from an overload of last-minute crisis work that's consistently promoted and enforced by the leaders who failed to make the right decisions at the front end. Now, this might be your situation. It might not be your situation. You might work for someone else. You might work for yourself and own your own business. In other words, though, the bottom line for everybody is this: when we're not clear about the next physical action we need to take, we are preparing ourselves to procrastinate because we're not clear. We haven't clarified about what we want to get done. Now, here's what we need to do. You're either attracted or repelled again by the things on your list. So make those things attractive by making them actionable. Action is attractive. So let's start taking more of it. Now, how do we take action? Time to take action. So if you've got a list, right? Most of us have a list of some kind of ideas, tasks, to-dos that we're not taking action on, that we're, in other words, procrastinating on. So if you've got that list, and if you can, if you're not driving around right now, go ahead and pull it up, right? Pull out your journal or the notepad or the app that you've got this list of things that you need to crank out done or written down in, and pull it out. Go through it right now and write down a single physical next action that you can take towards moving each idea, task, project, goal forward that you have on that list. Even if it's something small, figure out a way to make it actionable and then do it, right? Either now or sometime in the future, but make it actionable. Always have a next action to everything that you have on your list, right? Instead of saying auto club, say call the auto club to handle parts, right? Handle broken parts. Or, you know, make it actionable, make it detailed, clarify exactly what needs to happen and put that down there on your list. Because if we have a long list of stuff like birthday cake, you know, order book, start presentation, call, you know, Rick, and all this stuff, and we don't have any sort of next actions attached to them, detailed actions, then we're setting ourselves up for failure. We're setting ourselves up to procrastinate. And the best way to beat procrastination is this: by way of taking deliberate action yearly, monthly, weekly, daily, and in this very moment. All right, so what did we discuss? We covered a lot in this episode. So quick recap here: 3 steps to crushing, stopping procrastination for good. All right, if you follow these 3 steps, you will stop procrastinating, because it's logically, scientifically, research tells us that if you do this, you'll stop, right? You'll start taking action. And the first step, step one, is to understand that procrastination is nothing but a feeling. We procrastinate because the image in our head about how pleasurable or painful taking action or not taking action on a given thing or task may or may not be, right? We make it up in our heads. We create the image in our minds, right? Step two, the secret to stopping procrastination is to shift that focus from there's too much stuff to do, how will I ever get it done, to what's one simple thing I can do right now to move this project forward? What's one simple, doable thing I can do right now to move this goal forward? Right? And then finally, step three is to just consistently and constantly be asking yourself that question and chunking it down and simplifying it, and then taking the next physical action that you can, and always having a next action attached to a project. So a project is what? A project is anything that requires two or more tasks to complete, right? So if you've got a project, then every task on your list of project, on that project list, should have a next action attached to it. Not slides, but choose images for deck of slides, right? Not just write speech, but choose four examples to put in my presentation for the speech that I'm giving on Monday, right? So specific next actions to clarify those and write them down, create a project with a bunch of tasks and next actions that are required in order to complete them. And boom, bam, when you've got that in front of you, when you've got something simple to look at, when you've got a plan of action with doable tasks that you can act on, that you are capable of doing, then you, my friend, will have won the battle against procrastination. Yo, it's Dean. Listen, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the podcast. If you found this episode inspiring, or if anything else you've heard on the show has helped you or made an impact on your life in any way, I'd really appreciate it if you showed me a little love with a quick review over on iTunes or on whichever podcast platform you tune into the show on. Every single review helps us reach and inspire more people to live like they give a damn. Listen, if you've got self-help questions of your own that you'd like me to answer live on the podcast, hit me up over at meaningfulhq.com. You can submit them over on the contact page, or you can just shoot your questions directly to me at questions@deanbakari.com. Thanks again so much for subscribing, sharing, and tuning into the show. I've said it before, I'll say it again. It's because of you and tens of thousands of other listeners from around the world tuning in every single week, week after week, day after day, that we are able to continue creating content to help you crush it and make an impact in your life and at work. So thank you for being part of this and continuing to share the podcast with your friends, your family, and anyone else you think it could help. Until next time, this is Dean Bakari telling you to go out there every single day and live like you give a damn.